For Connecticut Public Radio, I'm John Henry Smith. You know, we've heard much rhetoric from politicians and media members like me as President Trump continues to allege fraud in last week's election and continues to refuse to concede to Joe Biden. Now, one group we haven't heard much from is our nation's corporate chief executive officers. To get a read of that room, I welcome to the program today a man who's very dialed into that community. He is Professor Jeffrey Sonnenfeld of the Yale School of Management. Sir, as much as the business class notoriously hates regulation and high taxes, it also famously hates uncertainty and instability. With the president refusing to concede and firing people like now former Defense Secretary Mark Esper, what level of alarm are you getting from the CEO class, the CEOs that you talk to, regarding the president's current conduct?
Thank you very much. Honored to join you, John Henry. And you phrased that very well. The business community does like to see continuity. While they, yes, they've like enjoyed some regulatory rollbacks and some tax issues, there's a great deal of concern for having instability and having disruption, having to do with a smooth transfer of power. Any violations of the legal guidelines of the Constitution would be very upsetting, but they also don't like divided markets. They don't like divided workforces. They don't like divided communities. Last Friday morning, when these CEOs came together, kind of alarmed at the president's message on Thursday night, suggesting preemptive powers that he doesn't have, that I hereby declare I won this state, that state, and then sort of condemning the elections as unfair with no evidence. They all said he should be entitled to exercise freedom of expression as any citizen would, as long as it's not incendiary and causing insurrections. So their great concern isn't that President Trump is having a tantrum and he has to concede. They're just concerned about the transition. And as you talk about the decapitation of the Pentagon of fine people that are competent in their jobs, there's no reason to do that with 68 days to go. And that's the thing that worries them as we see dangers at the Department of Homeland Security and at the FBI and the CIA, or Dr. Fauci, of course, in infectious disease. They're worried about him settling scores or worse in these remaining days, and we need to transfer power and transition information.
If the president continues his current course, was there any discussion among these CEOs about taking more public stances or putting pressure on Republican lawmakers with, say, pullback of donations?
Exactly those issues came up, that there was a threat, as they managed to do on other issues, to show that they have financial clout as well as a loud a voice, that we opened up with a great political historian, Tim Snyder, who said democracies only fail from the inside, and they fail generally at the time that's most poignant, is the time of an election, that democracies are created to have flexible, fluid laws to adapt to emergency and crisis situations. And when somebody claims that they have to suspend the rules, that has been labeled a coup d'etat by political scientists. Now, some of the CEOs thought that language was maybe a little overblown, but then others thought it was appropriate, is that it's important to respect the process that's there. And that's what they were alarmed about as they heard that. And they want to move forward again with this peaceful transfer of power, and they're willing to go to individual legislators of different states to make sure that these states do certify on schedule. They're concerned, and corporate relocation is not out of the question.
I want to switch gears slightly and just talk about what you expect in terms of economic policy from a Biden administration.
Well, I think we're going to see a good deal of focus on stability in trade relations. There was a lot of concern about China policies, and I actually agreed with some of the issues the Trump administration was raising. They didn't make great headway on those grounds, and we'll certainly see a great deal of stability when it comes to Europe and other major trading partners, that there won't be these one-offs. And something the business community is very pleased to see will disappear, speaking of these one-offs, is picking Pfizer versus Merck and GM versus Ford, and starting these battles that, as we saw, that were very divisive, Boeing versus Lockheed, or going after Goodyear, because the employees aren't supposed to wear campaign paraphernalia at work, or going after Harley Davidson because of reciprocal trade barriers that were introduced in Europe in response to trade practices of the Trump administration. They had to open a factory in Thailand, and President Trump attacked them for that, but that was the only way they could get product into Europe. But he was telling them to buy the competition. Well, the competition is Japan's Hero Honda. That's which is 94% of the market. Why do that or attack Amazon and say use Alibaba? That's not making America great again. Or attacking Goodyear, driving business to the French Michelin or the Japanese Bridgestone Firestone. So they don't want to be pawns in these battles anymore. I think they're just so relieved to have some degree of continuity, stability, and they're expecting that there'll be some modest upward corporate taxation issues, not as even maybe as high as 28%, but that won't be immediate, given that we have pressing problems right now in the economy thanks to the COVID crisis, and we're going to see a primary focus on abatement of this catastrophic health situation, which of course has economic consequences for business people and the business enterprises, but also stimulus to the enterprises. That there's actually a very good relationship, believe it or not, between Senator Mitch McConnell and President-elect Biden, and we expect to see some restoration of that effective problem solving when we get past all these histrionics.
I was going to go back and mention Goodyear real quick. I did hear that the tires on the presidential limo are Goodyears. He may want to be a little nicer to Goodyear.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
No, yeah. Really, really good point.
Yeah. So
that could be a blowout, huh?
Right, sure. Yeah. A blowout. Yes. Yes. Not in the sports sense, but an actual blowout. Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, you famously advised both of this year's presidential candidates, as well as President Clinton. How much do you expect the Biden administration will be consulting with you about the economy?
I don't know. I'd be honored if they did. I actually had a very longstanding relationship with President Trump, too, as I try to stay as nonpartisan as possible in this kind of a role. And have was the earliest critic of the Apprentice TV series, and used to debate him throughout all different TV shows and print media, and was writing a weekly column in the Wall Street Journal and places about what was wrong with each episode of the first season of The Apprentice. He didn't take that well, as you may have noticed. He doesn't like a lot of teasing. But after a bunch of threats, we got together, became quite friendly. But I've had differences of opinion since he stepped into the White House, and so far, thankfully, I haven't had an IRS audit, but who knows? It could be on borrowed time. Older ones.
If the Biden administration did ask for your recommendations, I mean, do you have like a top one or two highlights that you would tell them right off the bat?
Yes, I think that it's their tendency to not vilify business. I think that business is on the same side as the government. And what we have is the founding spirit of the Business Roundtable in 1970 was breaking away from other trade groups, the National Association of Manufacturers of that era 50 years ago, and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce of that era 50 years ago, were at war against environmental regulation and health issues and on so many fronts on diversity and inclusion concerns, which back then were called affirmative action. The Business Roundtable became a champion of all those things. So I think we're going to see that the Biden administration will have a fantastic relationship with this very forward-looking part of the business world. In fact, there's really been a mislabeling of the progressive movement that, I don't know, the media has accidentally fallen into this, but progressive thought is different than the certainly very legitimate perspectives of democratic socialists, which is the populist spirit of some in the Democratic Party. That's always had a very important element. Sometimes it was agrarian, sometimes it was urban, but it was a very important element of democratic politics. But that was never called progressive. Progressive were always throughout American history, very centrist. They were building the settlement houses for immigrations and improving dams and workplace safety and things of that nature. They were much more middle of the road and a mix of Democrats and Republicans. So that authentic era of progressive movement, I think, is what we'll see with the business community working hand in hand in partnership with this new Biden-Harris administration.
You mentioned the Business Roundtable, a group that represents powerful companies like Walmart and Apple and Starbucks. You know, they put out a statement congratulating Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. How significant is that? How much hand wrangling or hand wringing do you think went into that statement?
John Harris, good for you. What a great question. You know, at this point in our careers, you as a great journalist and also knows you've seen this in the sports world as much as you've seen in the political world because you know this space so well. You see a lot of platitudinous apple pie statements come out of these kinds of collective statements and collective action. This was actually a very meaningful statement and grew out of our event last Friday morning. Last Friday morning, as a bunch of these CEOs saw the president, were very alarmed, and the thing mushroomed into a spontaneous, with 10 hours of notice, phone call across the business community for a candid off-the-record call, and wanted the groups like the Business Roundtable to respond and to respond immediately because that's how you block this any sense of tyranny setting in. And is to go back to what are the constitutional principles here, and to give that legitimacy of an independent, nonpartisan, objective group of opinion leaders, such as the Business Roundtable. And that was a very important statement. They right away congratulated President-elect Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris. That was important. And they also underscored with a blessing, an endorsement of legitimacy of a fair and free election process. That was important. A third point that was really important is they also said that President Trump should be entitled to the freedom of speech and freedom to appeal anything in a judicial process they think is wrong, but that they don't see any evidence of it. And fourth, they said we should move along and get this transition process going now for national security and economic and public health reasons. Let's get things moving. That was what they said. And remarkably, whether or not it was President Netanyahu and Prime Minister Netanyahu in Israel or Prime Minister Boris Johnson in the UK or in Saudi Arabia or wherever, we saw even some very Trump-friendly world leaders jump on board and take the exact Business Roundtable statement, almost verbatim, in some cases was verbatim, as they immediately endorsed and celebrated this this new administration. And President Bush, George W. Bush, similarly modeled that same afternoon, which is really remarkable. Then Karl Rove and others, the GOP advisor, have jumped on board, and that governors around the nation, whether or not it was in Maryland or Wisconsin or Massachusetts or things, that these were it was important to lay that statement out there. So that was crisper than you usually see these statements. It was very direct and it was extremely timely. So my hat's off to them. I celebrate them. And it's actually what that founding generation of the Business Roundtable would have celebrated 15 years ago. Sadly, in the middle intervening years, the Business Roundtable became much more of a defensive, reactive group and had lost their way. But that win-win between society and business is back on board, and that statement modeled it well.
Is there an event, is there a day, is there a moment coming up that will trigger more activity, more public protestations from the CEO class?
Great question, too. We're expecting that next Friday, a week from today, the 20th, there should be a certification of the Georgia ballots. They're doing a hand one-by-one recount, as was requested. And once that's done and that's certified, that's another major milestone where they expect to see this transition move forward. And the business community, someone to meet then, see what happens soon after that. Others are saying, let's just wait another 3 days till the following Monday, November 23rd, because that's when the rest of the states, those few remaining ones, will have to certify officially, whether or not that's Pennsylvania and others. And at that point, once certified, the electors have to follow the popular vote, and then this is a done deal. If there's any monkey business, though, in this intervening week, they could call a spontaneous meeting again.
Final question here. How much or how little do the CEOs you talk to want Congress to pass a robust stimulus package to help struggling Americans and businesses?
They are wildly in favor of it. They think it's really necessary, and they're especially concerned, of course, about small business and how to get this in the hands of small business leaders, but also getting it in the hands of employees and workers and their families. So there's a great deal of concern out there over that, and that the posturing has them so close. It's just the president has hopped around in different positions as to what he's wanted that has confused the GOP, much the way on DACA legislation on the immigration front. They'd gone so many different directions that the GOP decided to just sit back. They're not quite sure what the president wants, and they didn't want to get out in front of him and have him veto it. But on several of these things, such as on infrastructure, too, which, is, by the way, would be another priority of the business community, technology, infrastructure, as well as transportation infrastructure. We had four different infrastructure weeks that became a joke. They all kept fizzling.
Yale School of Management Professor Jeffrey Sonnenfeld, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. It was a delight to join you.